So good evening. This evening, I'd like to give a talk about connections, if you will, between Zen and the Noble Eightfold Path. Lin Chi once told a monk, "If you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him." Though easily misinterpreted, such startling statements are intended to wake us up. Still, as iconoclastic as many Zen teachers may appear, Zen practices have their roots in Buddha's original teachings. Buddhism is comprised of many different lists: the two truths, the three refuges, the four noble truths, the five aggregates, the six paramitas, the seven factors of awakening, the noble eightfold path, and so on. It's helpful to know that each teaching in Buddhism contains all the other teachings, because ultimately they all have their source in meditation. And they all point toward the salvific quality of reality, just as it is. Still, there are a few Buddhist teachings that are foundational. The Four Noble Truths explain that life includes suffering. Suffering has causes. Suffering ends. And there is an eightfold path of practice to alleviate suffering. The Noble Eightfold Path is the heart of the Buddha's teachings. Today, I'd like to explore how the Eightfold Path is deeply woven into the Zen tradition, even though it is not always explicitly named. The key guidances of the Eightfold Path manifest at Morning Star and in Living Vow Zen's sutras, vows, and practices. To practice Zen is to embody and actualize the Eightfold Path, even if we don't call it that. The elements of the Eightfold Path are right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, right thought, and right understanding or insight. The Eightfold Path aims at promoting the three aspects of Buddhist training: ethical conduct, meditation, and wisdom. These three aspects contain all the elements of the Eightfold Path and are interdependent practices. Ethical conduct is inspired by the wisdom that we are deeply interconnected, which we clearly see for ourselves in meditation. Yet we can also explore each aspect of the Eightfold Path separately. There are three ethical commitments in the Eightfold Path: right speech, right action, and right livelihood. In the Zen tradition, again, though we don't necessarily name it as the Eightfold Path, we find our ethical guidelines most explicitly stated in our Bodhisattva precepts, which we read today, and four of our 16 vows specifically address right speech because it is so important. I gave a talk recently, not too long ago, about right speech. In these four precepts, we state, "I vow to take up the way of not speaking falsely. I vow to take up the way of not finding fault with others." Well, these are deep, right? These aren't easy. I vow to take up the way of not elevating myself at the expense of others. I vow to take up the way of not defaming the three treasures. Right action is another ethical commitment in the Eightfold Path that aims to promote moral, honorable, and peaceful conduct, encouraging us to abstain from destroying life, from stealing, from dishonest dealings, from illegitimate sexual intercourse, I'm quoting someone there, and encouraging us to help others to lead ethical and peaceful lives. Though in Living Vow we avoid the use of the term illegitimate to describe sexual intercourse, Zen's Bodhisattva precepts offer corresponding guidelines for ethical behavior. I vow to take up the way of not killing. Again, we could spend a whole Dharma talk on just that one precept. The precepts are so deep, and we find so much of the Eightfold Path within them. I vow to take up the way of not killing. I vow to take up the way of not stealing. I vow to take up the way of not misusing sex. That's how we say it. Misusing. It allows for a certain kind of awareness. I vow to take up the way of not intoxicating body and mind. I vow to take up the way of not sparing the Dharma assets, meaning in part that we vow to be of benefit by sharing the Dharma as appropriate with those who are suffering. I feel like each one of those is worth a full Dharma talk. Each precept, there's so much to them, and we've had classes on the precepts because they're so deep and so central that they're right at the heart of the Eightfold Path. Right livelihood is the third ethical commitment of the Eightfold Path, meaning that we should abstain from making our living through any profession that brings harm to others, such as trading in arms, lethal weapons, intoxicating drink, poisons, killing animals, cheating. We should earn our living in a profession which is honorable, blameless, and innocent of harm. In our Zen tradition, as mentioned above, we vow in our precepts to avoid killing and intoxicants, and a deep reading of these precepts suggests that we should do all we can to promote life and avoid any activity that leads to the taking of life, such as selling arms or intoxicants. In our precepts, we also vow to cease from evil and practice good, including in our professions. The second aspect of the Eightfold Path is meditation, or as it is traditionally named, mental discipline, in which three other guidances are offered: right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Traditionally, right effort is the energetic will to prevent evil and unwholesome states of mind from arising, and to get rid of such evil and unwholesome states that have already arisen, and also to cause to arise good and wholesome states of mind not yet arisen, and to develop and bring perfection to the good and wholesome states of mind already present. In Living Vow Zen, we remind ourselves of this guidance during every sutra service. When we recite our Gatha of Atonement, in which we state, all evil karma ever created by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, I vow to atone for it all. This chant, followed by meditation in our service, helps to illuminate these painful states of mind, what we call the, quote, three poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance. In our tradition, we do not try to prevent such states from ever arising. Such a practice can lack compassion. It can be repressive and lead to spiritual bypasses of appropriate feelings. However, in meditation, we consciously decide not to fuel or act on these painful states when they arise. Instead, we sit still and bear witness to their arising and their dissolution, revealing that we need not be enslaved by any mind state. We know in a deep way every mind state is impermanent, empty of fixed essence. Additionally, in our Bodhisattva precepts, we say, I vow to take up the way of not harboring ill will. Notice the language there. I take up the way of not harboring ill will. We notice ill will arise in us, and then we let it go, rather than investing in it. By no longer adding fuel to the flames of division, and by allowing the three poisons to arise and dissolve rather than acting impulsively on them, we open beyond these painful states to our inherent interconnection with all beings, resulting in a deepening sense of compassion and care, having paused to realign with our vows. We can often take more skillful and less harmful action to address injustices and alleviate suffering. Of course, being human, sometimes we make mistakes. 1,000 mistakes, 10,000 mistakes. So we also practice atoning and renewing our vows. This is how we actualize our compassionate true nature. Which leads us to the second guidance in meditation, which is right mindfulness, which is to be diligently aware of the body, sensations, feelings, the mind, and all things. In other words, we practice awareness of life just as it is. In this practice, we come to see that all things come and go, even senses of self. Everything dissolves into what is. The third and last guidance of meditation within the Eightfold Path is right concentration. In Zen practice, to cultivate concentration, we begin with counting the breath. We may find that, and by the way, this is a practice that I still do every single day. Some people may think that counting the breath is a practice that's like for novices. I still do this practice every day. We may find that feelings and thoughts naturally settle during this practice, but we do not explicitly aim to silence our minds, for doing so is buying into yet another idea that simply leads us away from realizing the true nature of whatever is present. It can also foster a belief in a fixed self that needs to be fixed or eradicated when there is no fixed self to begin with. So we do not aim to be anything, and instead notice the ever-changing constellation of processes that we used to identify as a self. As concentration naturally develops, we might open our awareness to noticing the sensations of the body, ideas that come and go, shape-shifting feelings, and the dance of life around us. Bird calls, outside the Zendo. We call this expansive practice shikantaza, where we simply notice whatever is present without aiming to change or fix a thing. This practice cultivates a profound equanimity that does not depend on the content of our hearts, minds, or experience. This is liberation in the deepest sense. The remaining two guidances of the Eightfold Path, namely right thought and right understanding, constitute the aspect of wisdom. Right thought suggests thoughts of love and compassion, which extend to all beings. In our tradition, we cultivate this sense of care in our bodhisattva precepts when we vow to save all beings. We remind ourselves of this vow every time we recite our four bodhisattva vows at the end of every service. We also dedicate our practice during sutra services to those who suffer. This is how we practice in the realm of relative truth. Finally, right understanding, the last guidance of the Eightfold Path, which of course has no beginning and no ending, is the profound realization of the exact equality of emptiness and form, ending all suffering and distress. This understanding is the highest wisdom, which sees the ultimate reality. According to Buddhism, there are two sorts of understanding. What we generally call understanding is knowledge, an accumulated memory, an intellectual grasping of a subject according to a certain given data. This is called knowing accordingly in the Buddhist tradition, and sometimes is referred to as the relative truth, which is the term I tend to use. It's important, but not very deep. And when we attach to particular ideas and mind states, we project selfhood into things and lose the deeper insight of emptiness. Deep understanding is opening beyond names and labels. It is intimacy with all beings exactly as they are, beyond conception. In meditation practice, we learn to relate with all ideas and compass points as provisional. And we practice opening beyond all such ideas to encounter reality in a more intimate way. Trungpa calls this intimacy compassion, which is beyond dualistic thoughts, beyond self and other. This inherent intimacy with all beings is the deep source of compassion for all, without exception. So as you can see, though we do not necessarily cite or talk explicitly about the Eightfold Path very often in Zen, it is utterly woven into our liturgy, vows, practices, teachings. I've only scratched the surface of the many ways the Eightfold Path manifests in living vow. To practice Zen is to walk Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path, no matter what we call it. Thank you.